This is the First Time Podcast.
Part reality series.
Part writer's masterclass. It's a podcast about the first time
you publish a book.
I'm Kate Mildenhall.
And I'm Catherine Collett. Welcome to The First Time.
Catherine, it's the end.
This is the last episode for the season.
It's kind of exciting and terrifying and wonderful.
I feel sad.
And sad. What are we going to talk about today?
Okay. Well, the helpline's in the world.
It's out. You've survived. You're alive.
We have interviewed 17 amazing Australian authors, agents and editors on the first time you get published.
I can't believe they all said yes.
I know. We're and we so even lucky. Have some lined up for season two.
No,
even
amazing.
Better. But I feel like I've learned a lot. And I think you, even though you're further along this journey than me, I reckon you have too. So I think we've got three things each that we've learned.
Oh, so hard to just kind of nail it down.
I'm going to let you kick off.
Okay, let me kick off. And I think that we're going to have some crossover because the first thing that I've learned is, oh my goodness, how grateful am I for the writer community that we are part of and that surrounds us and that has so allowed us to do this work. I think the opportunity to have conversations with other writers has been amazing. The support that people in the industry have given us to have these conversations and also to put them back out to the community that we're part of. I've learned so much from every single conversation, and I think people's honesty and generosity in what they've been prepared to share with us.
Yeah. We should have kept recording after the interview sometimes, though. You get the gold at the end,
gold.
I suppose that's why it comes out.
And eventually, you know, in the years to come, when we have our down periods between, I don't know, like our fifth and sixth novels, we'll reveal all in what they said once the microphone was turned off. So I think all of that part of the community, and also I think you're part of my writing community, you've been very brave to open yourself up so honestly before and after the process. Like when we go back and think about.
Yeah, it's funny to think back, actually.
Yeah. Our conversations that we had right at the start when none of this had happened. Like your book
wasn't
out in the world.
Well, nothing was happening. We were like, what are we going to talk about?
Exactly. So I think that's also set the tone, and that some of the things that people are already saying to us, the feedback that we're getting has been, we're loving the openness and we're loving your frankness in talking about this. And I think that has set the tone that you've been willing to talk about it like that, as have others that we've interviewed. What was your highlight?
My number one was also community.
Yeah.
I think I can remember studying at RMIT and Claire Strawn, who has a couple of YA novels, teaches at RMIT. She's a lovely, lovely person. And she, one of the first things she said to the class was, I see you as writers in a community of writers. And that always really, really resonated with me. I loved that idea. I mean, one part of it was about acknowledging all of us as writers, but that sense of community, that we're all in it together, that it's not a competition. It's not a competitive industry, you know, just it's not like there's a limited pie. And if someone reads my book, they can't then read yours. Mm. You know, you're all in it together. But also, I think my understanding and appreciation of community has evolved. So I think now I feel like, I reckon when I had a baby, I realized what a terrible aunt I was.
I totally know that feeling.
Yeah, that I didn't understand what, I don't know, in that example, having kids meant to the person having kids.
Yep.
And in some ways a book can be like that.
Totally.
Like you have friends that write books and you have an appreciation that the book is very meaningful to them. But I guess your perception as an outsider is that they just must be experiencing unadulterated joy. There's no nuance to the, you know, there's not a spectrum of emotions that you would experience. And also, I didn't realize that you care about, you know, in the same way that I care about my book, yeah. all of those books in the bookshop, everyone has a, you know, equally special attachment to.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's been a big learning for me. And a nice, yeah, nice evolution of that idea of being a writer in a community of writers.
I think so too.
Second learning.
Like we're in our staff review. I think this has been an ongoing one, and it's the fact that the work is really twofold and separated. So there is this creative, artistic side of the work, which is you and your writing and all the thinking that you're doing about it, and this deeply personal, intimate process that you're going through, which other people are involved in at different stages along the track. But, you know, it's you and your writing. And then there is the business of selling, marketing, promoting a book. And I think that probably right at the start, I thought that, you know, books that are worthy just rose to the top, and they somehow got on lists and they got and they sold lots of books just because they deserved to be. Yeah, absolutely, that it was a meritocracy. And that's just not the case I don't know what, 99.9% of cases. And you can't...
Which is not to deny that award-winning books deserve to win awards.
Absolutely
but it's
not.
Both,
and it's not, and it's certainly not to say that, you know, a great marketing campaign does things that the worth of a book cannot. But if you want to sell books, and if it's not just a weird other process that, you know, is just about you putting work out into the world and then going back into your weird...
garret or something.
Garret and writing more works, and you really actually don't care about selling books or anything like that. For everyone else who has to make a living and who wants people to read their work, you really do have to engage then in that second part of the business. And I think so many of the people that we interviewed talked about that. And I remember clearly when we went up to Canberra and we were doing the panel with Karen Viggers and Jack Heath and Emma Gold, and hearing them talk about actually reserving money aside from their advances, you know, small advances, not huge advances, but putting that aside for their marketing for their next book. And me having this real light bulb moment.
Yeah,
where I was kind of like, people are actively working.
And they all had different opinions on
different
that.
Opinions.
Some thought that was a good,
yeah,
some
different
others
opinions,
didn't.
But this idea that each of the people we've spoken to in different ways has really actively thought about making the best path possible into the world for their book. And they have worked to do that, and that there's nothing to be ashamed of or think that that is some dirty kind of business side where you're selling out, that it's a different part of the industry and it's an important one nonetheless. So that's my big second learning.
That's a good one.
What's yours?
Mine was... probably thinking about, I guess, what you want to focus on. That were things that you have control over. So I guess one of the things in talking to Alison Manning that I think was really helpful was the frame of success. And so that really once you have written the book and the book goes into the world, you actually have no control over the reception of that, whether some people will love it, some people will hate it, some people will be in between. And the way she sort of had, you know, the frame that she kind of said to put around that is to think of your first book as, you know, because sometimes we think about it, it's a part of ourselves in the world. And so you can then frame that it's, you know, if people love my book, they love me.
Yeah.
You know, when really she was saying you need to think about it, you know, you're an artist, you're a writer, you have a long career, and this is one thing you're putting out into the world over that long career. I really liked that idea, and it was something that both Graham Simsion and Jack Heath commented on as well. I remember Jack Heath talking about he's written like 20 books. He's younger than I am, and, you know, but he started writing as a, you know, first published as a teen. But him... he talked about a number of books that he'd written. And so there was one time when he had two books coming out at pretty much the same time. One he'd spent a lot of time on, thought was a really, really good book, was really personally attached to. Another one had taken, you know, 4 months or something. He was not really that attached to it, but they both got released at the same time. He put all his marketing energy into the book that he was really attached to in a sales and critical reception sense. It didn't bomb, but it didn't do very well. Mm. Whereas this other book that he was like, it's not my favourite, did extremely well. I think it sold overseas, this sort of stuff. So hearing someone like Jack talk about, who has already had that long career of books, he has a real detachment from, which I think is really, really healthy.
I think it's healthy too. And I loved the way that everyone we spoke to talked about the different ways that they saw success.
Yeah.
Because I think that having that full
range. And none of them did the number of, not one, not even Graham Simsion, who sold 3.5 million copies, talked about success in terms of
numbers. No one thinks they've done it.
No.
Which is part of what's so exciting about going back and doing the next book.
Yeah,
is because
exactly.
You need to have that kind of fuel, I suppose, to push you on.
And it takes you away from thinking about getting inside your own head in terms of,
yeah,
you write what you like, you know. Back to you.
Back to me. My last one, I think, is about making something and actually making the podcast as a creative kind of act and collaborating with you and with our team and with the writers that we've spoken to, that there was something about, there's been something about that process that has given me fuel and has really fed the creative process, because I can't handle sitting alone with myself and my book very well. And I often throw myself into other kinds of projects, wherever they be. What I've loved about this one in particular is because, A, it's felt like we've made something for our community. So we're kind of giving back or paying forward or something along those lines. But B, you know that I love reading about writers on process and I listen to all the podcasts and I'm a total junkie for that stuff. So it has fed me creatively, and I've just taken a little bit of time away from my manuscript. But I'm now realizing that all those conversations that we've had and all the thinking that we've done is really feeding that as well. So I can kind of dive back into the writing part, having done this, having made something and put something out into the world. And I think that's deeply satisfying, whichever way you look at it.
It's nice to have a communal thing.
Yeah.
As you say, rather than just a...
Because otherwise you'd go mad, right?
Pursuit. Totally.
What's your last one, Catherine?
Well, I actually struggled with the last one. I was the one that said we had to each come up with three.
That's true,
and then
she
I was
did.
Like, don't really have a third. Maybe I'll just hear what Kate says for the third. And I do like your third.
Thank you.
I guess the one thing I would say, social media is still a bit of a mystery. Oh. I'm sitting on the fence about social media.
That's all right. You're allowed to, remember. We've had people say that we don't have to do it.
Yeah. And I'm the boss of me, you know.
You are the boss of you.
I think Graham Simsion's take on social media is really interesting. He says, you know, it's not going to sell books, but I think even he acknowledges that it is all about community.
Absolutely. And then we've got, you know, Jane and Annabelle coming in. They met on Twitter.
Yeah.
Like, and you see, oh my gosh, they've made all this amazing stuff happen.
Yeah.
And so they wouldn't have done it without it.
I think I'm still learning on social media. I think if I just think about it as purely a friendship making exercise, that's probably the most satisfying it will be. But maybe I'm not interested in that, into social media. Like that, I mean, that's a possibility.
And that is perfectly fine. And potentially people will be able to reflect back when they're listening to this episode, forensically pull apart your social media to see exactly how you're going.
Yeah, that'll be good.
I'll be
improving. I'll be better by the time this comes out.
You'll totally be better.
3,000 followers.
3,000, is that what you're aiming for?
What's the name of the clothing company? What's the name of the clothing company that you did your shoot?
Obus.
Obus. Yeah. I have a photo shoot with Obus.
Yeah, we're totally going to get people to give us clothes and jewellery. Holidays? Do you reckon we could get holidays out of this?
Oh, my God. Research trip.
Stay tuned. In this episode, I interviewed writer Jamie Marina Lau about her creative process and being published with independent publisher Brow Books. I so enjoyed speaking to Jamie, and we thought that this was a fitting interview to finish our season on. Enjoy. We're so thrilled to welcome Melbourne writer Jamie Marina Lau to The First Time. Jamie is a writer and musician from Melbourne. Her debut novel, Pink Mountain on Locust Island, was published in 2018 by Brow Books. Her work can be found in Cordite, Rookie Magazine, Voiceworks, The Art Ho Collective, and in Monash University's 2016 anthology, Futures. She's currently studying film and literature, producing music, and working on more fiction, most recently as the recipient of a Wheeler Centre Hot Desk Fellowship. Welcome, Jamie.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's a great pleasure. I wanted to start by asking you about the first thing you ever had published. What was it, and when did you have it published?
It was a short story I wrote for Voiceworks magazine. I don't remember when it was. I think it was 2015, but I think it was a year after I came out of high school.
Okay.
And it was a short story that was classified as speculative fiction, but I had no idea what that meant at the time.
Okay.
I was like, I think I got asked to read it somewhere, and I was like, at a speculative fiction event, and I was like, what? I was like, what's speculative fiction? It was like this really bizarre story that was just about two people, and it was very vague. It was like, you know, very not specific at all, and just about two people at the end of the world, and it was very corny.
And how did you know about VoiceWorks? Like, how did you know where to submit?
Oh my goodness. I spent like most of high school researching like how to get published, where to publish stories, because even though that was the first thing I had published, it was not like the first thing I'd ever written. I'd written way worse things in the past. The first thing I ever wrote was actually a book when
How
I was
old
about
were you?
14.
Yeah, wow. What was the book?
It was very similar to that short story, actually, which I completely forgot that they like were pretty much parallels of each other. But it was just, I was really into F. Scott Fitzgerald at the time.
Yep.
And I was like, I didn't really understand like the context of his work or like the complexity of his work. I just really thought it was beautiful. And so I was like, what if it was like F. Scott Fitzgerald, but the world was like slowly dying?
Love it.
Yeah. And it was like this 60,000 word book.
Wow.
Something like that. Yeah. And it was just, I wrote it when I was 14. And I was like, how can I get this published? How can I, you know, get into that world? I just romanticized the whole world of it so much.
As we all do.
Yeah, just like Googling like American agents and like agents in New York. And then eventually it got down to like the smaller cities. And
okay, so you really wanted it.
I really wanted it just because I finished the book and I was like, what do I do with it? And I was in high school and bored of high school. So I was like, cool.
So when that first piece was that, when that short story was then published in VoiceWorks, what was that like seeing your words in print?
It was crazy. I think I went up to the desk where they were selling the magazine. I was like, I'm in the issue. Could I have my free issue? And it was like a big deal to me at the time. I was like really, really happy, and it sort of changed my perspective of being published though.
Okay.
Because I'd never gone through an editing process before. It was always just me like spurting out all these books and just not thinking that once it's there and you can't change anything about it. So that was also a feeling I had when something was published of mine.
And did it validate then that wishing and ambition you'd had about being a writer?
I think so. Like,
did other publication follow quickly after that? Or, you know, like, did it spur you on energetically, I suppose?
I think so. I think, I'm not sure. I think I spent a lot of that time not even thinking about publication after I got published, because the first time it kind of scared me a little bit. Like, it scared me in the fact that anyone can go to a store and, like, pick this up. Like, people I know can pick this up. And it sort of suddenly became not my own thing anymore. It became like, I have to have a reason to write. Like, why should I have the like all these pages to myself and just not know why it's there? Like, people, like, not that people cared at the time, because people were still just like, oh, she just got a story published. She's not going to be a writer. It's just like, you know, she did this one time. So I felt like I had to validate myself. Like, you know, why would I take up these pages, and why
wow.
would I? Yeah. So
that's
like
a big kind of a, I suppose, a shift or a kind of existential crisis to be having after that first publication experience.
It is, because I think I tried so hard, really blindly for so many years, trying to sell books to, like, I physically wrote emails to people over in America and they'd reply being like, this is empty, like this. And I was like, you know, 15 reading these emails. And I was like, oh, they just don't like it. They just don't get it. And then when I got published, I realized all of a sudden, like, this is actually a privilege to be published, and it's a privilege to be, like, able to express yourself and express ideas and not, you know, be criticized back for it. It's like I realized I had to criticize myself before, you know, or I had to, you know, be the critic of my own work before it got published. I couldn't just write furiously and just send it off and, you know, be like, I'm a storyteller. I had to understand why I was writing.
So to go on then, because so that was when you'd finished school. Now, Pink Mountain comes out, what, 3 years after that point?
So, yeah, I think so.
Did you begin writing Pink Mountain then?
I think, because I'm studying literature at uni right now.
Yep.
That's like my major. I started to sort of explore outside of the fiction realm. Like, I was looking into, like, poetry. And I think I was taking a lot of courses that are units that weren't even literature. So I was like trying to learn a lot, and I was trying to sort of get myself out of the way I was writing before, which was literally just like trying to copy movies, trying to copy any of the books I was reading. I was trying to read as much as possible as well, like outside of what I was comfortable with. And I think it was like the semester I was taking a poetry class, and I got assigned, like, it was a random, like, pick that we had to at the beginning of semester. I picked out Surrealism and, like, André Breton. Wow. And I sort of started playing those, like, Surrealist games that they did, just because, like, that was my homework. At the end of the semester, I had to present something that came out of those, like, experiments.
Yeah.
And so I did that and got really into automatic writing. And I think it was that semester that I started writing Pink Mountain. But I started writing it in an introduction to fiction writing class. And it started in class. I remember it was like the first time I read out my work aloud to workshop. Before that, like, I was
the first
super
time
nervous.
Ever.
First time ever. Wow. Like, I had to do that because the teacher, she made sure everyone read a week at a time, and she was really good, and she picked me out that week, and I just had happened to write the first chapter of Pink Mountain, but, like, I didn't know it was going to be a book.
And the first chapter as it stands now?
Yes. Yeah. Wow. Literally, I think that's one of the things that we didn't touch as much.
Okay.
Because it was super raw, and, like, I don't even remember what the prompt was. I wish I remembered what the prompt was. I think it was, like, build a space. Build a space, but don't build the characters, or something like that. Yeah.
And so, how did it feel when you read out those first words? Was there an energy in them?
Oh my God, I was like shaking. I think so. I think I felt really comfortable with it. I think I felt like reading it aloud was really cool because I had to own it as well. And then afterwards, I think I got positive feedback on it. I don't remember. I like to think I did because, you know, it's what's published, but. Yeah, it felt really good, I think. It felt good, yeah, because then afterwards I couldn't stop writing it, and, like, the character built itself, like, quite easily. And after that class, I think it was 2 or 3 months that I wrote it, just every day, though. Like, I wrote 7 hours a day once.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it feels like that. I mean, it's such an extraordinary book. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I should have said
so
that
much.
Right at the start, because it's an extraordinary book. And I can actually imagine when you're talking about reading it out loud, like, it is a kind of book that you would want to read out loud as well, because just the language in it is so extraordinary. But it does have that fever dream kind of feel. Like, I can, when you say that you read it, that you wrote it so quickly, you can see that in terms of the entire world that you've built in those pages.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask, so you write it in this kind of a incredible fury.
Mm.
How did it come to get published? What was the process there?
I don't even remember. I think it was just really good timing, to be honest, because Brow Books had just, like, started up.
Yeah.
And they were doing, like, an open call out, and I followed. After, like, I knew VoiceWorks, I followed every sort of literature magazine in Melbourne, which, like, I had no idea about before. So I was really lucky to be informed about that afterwards. And, yeah, I submitted it on Submittable, the way that I submitted like my poems and everything. And it was like normal for me by then to write like a cover letter. So I think that experience was good because I sort of just did the standard like.
Because you'd been submitting to all of these other literary journals as well.
Yeah, just via email as well. Yeah. So like this was a really easy step for me. Everything else. Yeah, everything else sort of informed how I did this one, and it was just another submission. And
that's
it was
really
like,
interesting because lots of people talk about that kind of, I suppose, that really heavy weight of an expectation about submitting this manuscript that they've been working on. But for you, it seems like it was, you know, I'm just
it
submitting
was like
a lot
I
of
was,
stuff.
Yeah, it was like, I mean, I was still just like, I don't know, I was still as nervous as I was usually, but for me, it becomes such like a business thing. And I think I'd sort of had to face the reality that it was selling your book as a product. Yeah. And so it was just like the non-romantic sort of idea. That's how it happened. Yeah.
And then, so did you, was there a long kind of waiting period then? Before
yeah,
you
there
heard
was
back?
A month. And the funny story is that, well, it's not funny because, well, I actually got super impatient. And because I did often, actually, I was really proactive. It's not like I was waiting around for people all the time. I think I've always been super driven. And so I emailed Sam, who's my publisher, and was like to him, just wondering if you've read it. Do you think, do you think you like it? You know, I was just super upfront about it. And he emailed back and he's like, that's crazy that you emailed, because I think it was something like he was thinking about on the train that morning or something like
oh
that.
Oh my gosh, one of those
serendipitous moments.
Yeah,
it was strange moments. And he was like, let's meet up and talk. And it was still not like affirmed. And like those weeks was just like, I never told him, but like I just had so much anxiety.
I can
for
imagine.
Those weeks. Yeah. And because it was never sort of set in stone. It was always just a talking about the book. And he would ask me about what I read and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, can you tell me
if you're going to publish a thing? Yeah. Wow. So then how long was the process of the editing and what was that like for you?
So I think it was October that we met in 2016. It's 2018 now. And since that meeting, I think it was all in that summer where I met up with the designers of the book who would end up designing the cover, and meeting with Sam a few times and talking about what we wanted to do with it. There were all these different possibilities. We actually were tossing up the idea of doing the book backwards, like the way that Chinese publication works.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, which is crazy. But I think we also talked about the reality of Australian publishing.
Yeah.
So you would know about that. A lot of things sort of get pushed into that mainstream box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very much so. And I think, I mean, that's what's incredible about Brow Books and what they're publishing.
Yeah, totally.
How have you felt being part of the kind of Brow Books family? Like, what's
it's been
like?
It's really good. I really like it because it's sort of just like I can always just like go into the office. It's like a really sort of friendly environment that's kind of like if you want to ask something, ask it. It's not as scary as like all the websites that used to come up when I googled what publishing's like, where it's they're going to leave you in the dark for ages.
Yeah,
like my book was left a year before it was actually published and edited. Like I didn't touch the book for a year.
Yep.
But I think it was almost it was always like I could ask when it was going to happen. I could ask like how it was going to happen, what happened afterwards the whole time. Like I never felt afraid. And I think in terms of the freedom of the way we get to see the product of the book,
yep.
We got to always talk about the cover and, you know, even down to the things like would there be a blank page before the like the contents or whatever.
Yep.
Like it was just very specific and we could always put in about that. Like it wasn't like the writer, the designers, the text, you know, person. It was like always you have like you can have
felt
that
like
conversation.
A lot of agency in that.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah.
You talked about VoiceWorks and then with Brow Books, which is obviously part of the Lifted Brow.
Mm.
So that community, it sounds like, has been really important for you being involved in the kind of writing
sure.
community in Melbourne.
It's really sweet because I didn't the first two times I got published in VoiceWorks, it was like consecutive, but it was always still quite removed from me. Like I didn't feel like I was part of any kind of community, but it's cool how when things happen to like a writer, everybody like sort of makes sure that they know about it and like, you know, encourages each other and supports each other and, you know, promotes each other. It's really, yeah, I've learned, especially recently doing the like hot desk, it's been really like encouraging to actually meet the people that were doing that behind social media for so long. And yeah, it's just really cool to know that you can sort of, you know, just do, yeah, like get that.
That there are a whole lot of people who have your back as well in the community.
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
You've talked about the positives of the experience so far. Mm. What was hard? What got in your way? You know, what were the things that hindered you along that process from the start of writing Pink Mountain to publication?
I think it was pretty much that waiting period between when I had written it and was super excited about it. And I kind of knew that it was definitely special compared to the books that I had written before.
Yep.
And I knew why I had written it as well. One of the reasons why was because it was about an Asian character and I'd just never written about Asian characters before. They were always just, you know, the people exactly from the screen, you know, in movies and stuff. And so this book, it was really different, but it was also kind of tender to me that it was done right. Like, and that year of just thinking about editing it and what was going to be edited out and what I would have to sacrifice, like the, you know, the kill your darlings kind of thing. Because we didn't edit it that whole year. And I was just like, what do the people that have read it, you know, in Brow Books like about it? And what's going to have to go because the like Australian market might not reciprocate. Oh yeah.
And how did you, so after that waiting period, how did you find that editing process? Did a lot have to go or did you have to kill a whole lot of darlings?
I was actually so surprised that not a lot did go.
Great.
It was just, and the things that did go, I found corny anyway. So it was like, a year of it made me sort of grow up, like, and being in class as well, like being in literature class that year sort of, educated me and like gave me this new perspective of, you know, how to write. I don't know. I feel like I learned a lot in that year and I actually made most of the changes, or like I made a lot of the changes. And you know, we back and forth on that again. So it was like, it was really therapeutic actually to have that distance from it. Yeah. Because I think when I wrote it as well, there was still a bit of an element where I was a bit, not young, but a bit naive about what publishing something and the weight of like saying this is like the way that you say this is what is reality or not, or what is not reality, like, and how that is like stamped in the context of when it was written. And I just didn't get that at the time, and I think I sort of started to understand that.
I loved what I was reading an interview that you did with the Feminist Writers Festival, and we'll link to the interview, but you wrote about feeling that this book was probably one of the first honest pieces of writing that you'd done, and you said that you'd had to literally and physically force yourself out of the confines of the literature that you'd read and idolized for so long.
Sure, yeah.
So that sounds like it was part of that period and the learning. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think when I say like I had to force myself out of the physical confines, I sort of meant like how the book is formatted almost. So experimenting with poetry definitely helped because it was, you know, poetry was about giving you like a page or two, or, you know, however long the poem is, giving you that short time span where you're supposed to read it in one go and being able to be left with that and being able to form your own ideas out of that. And I think that's what probably most impacted the way that I tried to physically remove myself from the novel form. I made titles first, and I made like, you know, things would jump around in the book and I would like be okay with that. Whereas previously I wrote books just completely chronologically and just in their chapter forms, which is fine. But I think I was in such a rut that I had to change what I was doing.
I'm so interested in that process because for people who haven't read it, Pink Mountain is very episodic, and you've got these small kind of tiny little chapters, gorgeous kind of prose and very much informed by poetry. So you move the, are they all separately written down on different pages? Like, I'm interested in how.
Yeah, actually, the way that it was written is pretty much how it is in the book.
Laid out in the book.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So they were separated and there were the titles were, yeah, the titles were always first. I don't think we changed any of the titles of each episode, like, of each fragment.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I don't even remember touching that because that was the initial thought. And I do the same thing when I do music as well. Like the title comes before what it is and just like it builds around the title. So okay. I think that was like a new way of thinking, whereas before it was always like I'm going to write this huge story and then I'm going to like split it up. Whereas this one it was like I tried to scatter my brain. Like I tried to like cut everything before it would begin almost.
It's clearly really worked for you. I wanted to also ask you about this idea. You talked about this in that same interview about stepping away from or stripping back what you're influenced by and what you're reading. And I'm really interested because you're a student of literature and music and film as well. And so how you position yourself with being influenced by what you read and consume in art and in the world and how you separate yourself from that as well.
I think when I'm writing, I'm like consuming constantly. I'm like watching movies and everything. And then like at the same time, I'll be like reading something or listening to something. And I think the ideas that come from all of them and that like intersect between all of them usually is what comes out of it. Like I try to be doing multiple things at once. So I'm kind of not just drawing the same idea. Like I'm trying to find different perspectives and different ways of telling things. And, I'm sort of trying to just draw out what it means to me or like, you know, the ideas that form out of that. So.
And are you actively searching for things that you know have some link to the ideas that you're thinking about?
Not really.
Or are you just letting it kind of be an onslaught?
I've actually found recently writing my new book that the things that I just accidentally stumble across is what ends up informing me. When I end up looking for something, I just feel like I'm researching for an essay, which is fine, but like it's not. It's not the way that I concentrate. Like, it's not the way that I focus. It's usually when I'm, like, procrastinating that I find something. So it's really this weird, like, modern way of writing. It's just, like, you know, going through, you know, that Wikipedia game where you, like, just click on the links? Yeah, yeah. And you see where you end up and you try to end up somewhere. That's kind of what my writing process is like, which is super, like, dorky and sad, but
no,
it's like.
No, it's great. I love hearing that process. You said before you're a Wheeler Center fellow at the moment on a Hot Desk Fellowship working on a new work.
Yes.
I want to know, because there's that crazy period when your book comes out.
Uh-huh.
And I want to know how that was for you. You went to a couple of festivals. You know, how did you find it all?
It was cool. It wasn't actually as overwhelming as I thought it would be because, I don't know, I feel like I was prepared to be talking about it constantly. But it's interesting, like, how much it sort of weaves in and out because I went to Sydney Writers Festival and that was really cool. And that's sort of what I expected out of it. I was like, oh, I'm going to be going to different places with people I don't know and talking about it. But it's actually been a lot more of just me waiting to talk about it.
Yeah, okay, because there was a like, there was an eagerness in you to be able to speak about it.
Yeah, because I'd had so much distance from it. And I had this full like document of things that I wanted to talk about with it because it's sort of it's not vague, but it can be seen as vague, you know, the book itself. And I was sort of prepared to talk. And that's what the launch did for me. Like I was in conversation for my launch and that was really, really good because I could unpack everything and just like, you know, talk about whatever I wanted in the context that it was written. Whereas when I started to do things outside of that, it was sort of more about what did you want it to be? I don't know. Yeah, it's tricky because I think when I talked about it at my launch, it was sort of just everything that I wanted to talk about within the book. And then outside, yeah, sorry.
Well, when you're in festival situations, you've often been programmed with a particular idea in mind as well. So you're sitting with people who, and they want you to talk about a very particular thing.
And the conversation moves around, and it's kind of like you have to think really fast on the spot. And it's sort of weird to position your book in that way, in that the sense that it's universal and like perpetual almost, that it doesn't just sit in the time that it was written. So it was weird to sort of like, you know, talk about it in that way.
Have you done other publicity? Did you write articles? Did you do, you know, blog posts? Like what other stuff have you done to keep it out there?
I feel bad. I haven't really done much. I'm not sure how much you did or like how much your publisher...
I think talking to people for this podcast, like it just varies so incredibly and people feel really differently too about how much for they want to be involved in it as the author.
I think like the romantic idea that I like is that people will just find it and like, you know, pick it up in a library and like it means something to them or it doesn't mean something to them. Whereas when it comes down to like, I want to make a living out of this, it's really difficult to gauge how much you should be part of it and how much your face should be part of it and how much like your identity should be part of it. Like the only thing I did differently was that I got like a Twitter account.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know how to use it.
I'm so interested in this at the moment. I've just started listening to the Starving Artist podcast this idea of money and art, which I think is really an interesting idea that you've got going on in the book as well. And I wanted to actually... read. I hope this isn't completely weird reading back to you, but from your book. And there's one section called Medium Testament. And you write, the whole truth is that as an artist, you must go through the process. You make something, be happy, see it as a form of shit, be sad, make something new, and so on. And I'm interested in this idea and what you talk about in the book as what is art. What is it to be successful as an artist? What about money and art? Like, they're big issues, right?
Yeah, I feel like I think about that subconsciously all the time recently, just because of how present it is in my life now. But it's like, I never know. Like, I wouldn't know how to answer if it was like about success, especially because success is it when someone like messages you and be like, this really meant something to me at the time that I read it, you know, or is it like, you know, money and fame? So it's like, for me, I feel at peace with the way that the book's come out because it's, I don't know, like I've gotten messages from people saying that it got them reading again just because of its form. So I think that really specific and distinct feedback really, like, that's the goal that I want to meet. So I wanted to make goals for myself and not just be like, the way I'm going to measure success is money or, you know, a lot of attention. I sort of made a list for myself. I was like, why? It came back to the thing of why do I write or, like, why do I want to write? Because I'm not a particularly good reader, and I think that's why I wanted to make the goal for it to be people that don't read, you know, find another form to consume from, because, you know, now it's just sort of movies, television, social media. And I just sort of wanted to, because I started out reading books and books sort of like, I don't know, it having that wholeness of a novel, I think was super important to me. And so that's what I sort of kept my eye on when the book came out. I was like, that's going to be my goal, is for like, if I'm able to keep people reading or if I'm able to just make someone finish a book or like help someone finish a book just because of how easy it is to read through so many different segments.
That's really interesting. Know, that's, so that's one of the things on your Why You Write list. What else is on that list?
I think it started off actually as representation of like diverse kinds of people. And because I used to want to be in movies and everything as well, because I just really love movies.
Yeah.
And that's actually like movies... is, I don't know, I eventually want to be writing movies as well.
Yeah.
But I think the heartbreak of not being able to, you know, be an actress at the time I was like a kid, it was just like one of those silly dreams that you have, like you want to, you know, be like a musician or an actress or, you know, a doctor or a lawyer. It's kind of like, I think that just came back to me and I just wanted to write in characters that could eventually represent people that, like, you know, weren't necessarily getting represented.
Have you had that feedback from readers?
I actually got I read my Goodreads reviews.
We were just talking about this morning.
Do you read them too?
Oh my gosh, okay, I try not to now. Okay, so you're reading them though.
Yeah, so, and I think one of the users or one of the like reviewers was talking about how this kind of story, like an urban story or like, you know, the book is very much, you know, modeled after the typical sort of city rat kind of character, like in Bret Easton Ellis and, you know, even J.D. Salinger, that kind of, you know, typical novel. And I was, you know, because I love that kind of stuff, you know. And the review said, you never find, like, females and, like, coloured females as the, you know, protagonist and the center of that and, like, the pivoting point of that. And that just, that was, like, for me, that was what sort of...
That was what you set out to do.
Yeah, that's what I set out. That's what I set out to do, kind of subconsciously. But it was such a relief when I read that. I was like, "That's on my to-do list. Like, that's on my why I write list."
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
that's really fantastic. I wanted to ask you you mentioned success and how you measure success, and I didn't put this up top in your bio, but you are 21, which is younger than many of the writers we've had in to speak, and a lot younger than the average age of kind of first publication in Australia or around the world. So in terms of defining where you want to go and where you want to see your career, you just mentioned that you want to write films as well. You know, where do you see it kind of ending up? Where do you want to go with this career as a writer and artist?
I actually try to think about it as little as possible. I'm not sure about you, but like, you know, like do you think about, like,
oh my gosh, I think about it all the time. So it's really refreshing to hear someone who says they don't want to, you know, they don't want to, I suppose, is it because you don't want to be defined by that, or just because it's terrifying?
Just because it's terrifying, I think. It's one of those things where I really wanted to be published at a really young age, and then it happened, and then you think everything's going to be fine, but I'm just like living like I would even if I wasn't publishing, you know, it was just like, that idea. But when I think about it, also because I'm trying to juggle music with it as well.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy both so much. And they both started out as hobbies and they both started off as, like, you know, therapy. So it was kind of like, it's kind of scary to think about a repertoire of work after that. It's scary to think that I'm going to have to go through so many different phases, of things, and I'll look back on this book and not like it, or I'll look back at the next book and not like it, and I might never be published again as well. So it's like, I try not to think about it.
Yeah, that's incredible. Just when you mentioned music then too, do you see the publication or the putting out there, when you put your music out there, is that a similar feeling?
No,
to your
not
words
at all.
Going
it's so
there?
Easy to put music out there now. So it's like, that's also the weirdness of it. It's that, I'm not sure which is better, like to dwell on something for, you know, a year or more, or like, you know, it's taking me a while to write this next book. So like, you know, 2 years or more, and then to like make something on my keyboard, like, you know, produce something on my computer and then just put it up immediately. It's just, it's the weirdest thing because people respond to it either, like people will either respond to it differently or the same. And it just really confuses me which is better, like to do something really quickly and do it or to take your time. So I think I'm a little scared of that varying as well. Yeah.
The book's been described as kind of formally experimental and unconventional. Uh-huh. And there's that other world of kind of review and criticism that you kind of come up against when your book comes out there. And there was also, I think, Ellen Cregan in her review for Reading said, sometimes a book comes along that doesn't just make me very happy, but also makes me excited for the future. A lot of pressure.
So sweet. Yeah,
that was gorgeous.
That was sweet, but
so much pressure. And I wanted to ask you about how you manage those kind of expectations of others then, of either people thinking that you're in a particular genre or writing in a particular style.
I was just thinking about this the other day when I was formatting like my new manuscript.
Yeah.
I was like, wait, I shouldn't like try to do too much because then it'll be like, or I shouldn't try to do it again because it's just going to be like, that's not exciting anymore. That's not changing anything. That's just me like copping out, you know?
Yeah,
like,
okay. So you see it as a moving away from what you did the last time, developing into
something
different.
Like, I want to develop new ideas for sure. And I don't want to be, I don't know, I don't want to use the form as like a way to advertise the book, the way that like I feel like I was thinking of doing before this book. Yep. I don't know. Like, I feel like I want to make a conscious effort to move forward, and not just because of like people being like, I wonder what she's going to do next, or like being excited for the future, more just so that I don't feel like I'm copping out. Yeah.
How have you found the experience of getting into the creative process again for this next book? You're a hot desk fellow. What does that give you? Like, how does that help or hinder?
I really like it, just because it really legitimizes writing as a job. Like, I'm not sure how many sort of residencies you've been on. Have you?
A couple, but yeah. More like a smaller kind of one-week or two-week ones.
Yeah. So this is crazy because I got really excited and like set up my desk and like just bought coffee, like instant coffee, and put it next to, like, I just really loved having a place that I can just go, not even to be like isolated in my work, but also just practicality. Like, I love leaving like my laptop there, or like, you know, being able to do other things and not feeling like writing is just these, like the 7 hours that I wrote that like straight. Feeling like it's something that can go on and off, because sometimes when you write, you get really superstitious about not being able to do it again.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think that the desk really helps that way, because it's just, I don't know, it's a bit of a grounding point. Yeah.
That's fantastic. How would you like to influence or inspire other early career writers or other early career artists?
Such a scary question. I don't know. I think it's like experimentation is what really helped me, like stepping out of the zone that I was in and being like, I'm not doing this right, or I'm not doing this right for myself. I'm not doing this right for the time that I'm in, and catering to what, I don't know. I think it's pretty much, experimenting, not getting bored with it. Changing like your creative process is important for sure, and not thinking too much about publication, because I feel like that's the phase I'm in right now, and I'm thinking I want to get this book published, whereas when I wrote Pink Mountain, the first book, I wasn't even thinking about publication. Is that the same?
Don't
you
just wish you could get that feeling back? I know
it's crazy. So it's like, yeah, I know.
I want to ask you, because Catherine, my co-host, she's about to have her first book published.
Yes.
And so we ask each of our guests what advice you would give someone who's about to be published for the first time in terms of helping them navigate through this kind of weird world of coming out there into the world.
I think, Sam, my publisher, gave me the advice of just not thinking about it and moving on to the next project.
Yeah.
And that really helped in the year that I was sort of suspended between the book and the not book. So I would say, just move on quickly, because and just like think of it as like a time that you existed in that's going to be like, you know, available later, but to just keep moving forward. Yeah, I think that's what I would say. Yeah.
Jamie, it's been a complete delight speaking to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Since we recorded the interview with Jamie, Pink Mountain on Locust Island has been shortlisted for the Readings Prize for New Australian Writing, and Jamie has also been shortlisted for the Melbourne Prize's Readings Residency. To find out more about both those prizes and Jamie Marina-Lau, head to the show notes for this episode on our website, thefirsttimepodcast.com. And that, dear listeners, brings us to the end of season one. Thank you so much for coming along on the ride with us. It's been truly wonderful to hear from you, and we honestly kind of squeal with delight every time you get in touch, or when you leave a rating, or you tell us how you engaged with a writer you haven't read before, or you've taken advice from one of the interviews.
We very much plan to be back in your ears in 2019 with a second season and a whole new bunch of wonderful guests. We will also delve deeply into the how and why and everything else of not first, but second books.
This season would not have been possible without the extraordinary talent and hard work of our audio producers, Phoebe Ady and Harry Morris, who have gone above and beyond to turn our ums and ahs into beautiful audio. We also want to thank graphic designer Karcher Matters, who created our logo and lots of other bits aside, and our partners, who have supported the distribution of this podcast, Writers Victoria, ACT Writers Centre, and RMIT School of Media and Communication.
We have had a blast. Stay tuned on Twitter and Instagram, and we'll let you know when we'll be back.
See ya!
Yay!
You've been listening to The First Time Podcast, a podcast about the first time you publish a book. We recorded this episode at RMIT University on the traditional land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. This podcast is produced by Phoebe Ady and Harry Morris. The First Time Podcast is created with the support of Writers Victoria, ACT Writers Centre, and RMIT School of Media and Communication.